podcast from AusCert's 2009 conference is brought to you by Microsoft. For full risky business coverage of AusCert, point your browser to risky.biz.
Hello and welcome to this recorded AusCert presentation by ASI Solutions' Andrew Rourke. Andrew is the Executive Manager of IT Security Services for ASI Solutions, and here he talks about mobile phone forensics, a history and the future. Enjoy.
As we can see here, in 2002 we had 1.9 billion text messages sent. Is that right? Sorry, up from... Yeah, that's correct. So we've got 10.2 billion in 2006, so a massive increase there. We've got MMS messages of 63.6 million and up from 13.7 million in 2004. And worldwide in 2009, we had 2 billion subscribers, and we expect that to double by 2011. GPS sales have skyrocketed in the last couple of years, as you would all be fully aware. Okay, looking ahead, we have a couple of concept phones here. And what we have is the BenQ Siemens concept phone, which is a wrist bracelet, full functionality of a phone. And next to that, the Polymer Vision concept phone, which when you separate it and pull the flexible screen out, your image is displayed on that particular screen. Market share, Nokia holds the market share at 40%. And we have Samsung at 14 and Sony Ericsson 9, LG at 7 and others at 30%. However, these figures are pre-iPhone sales, so I would like to run them again. And I think that with the take-up of iPhone, we would probably see a bit of a swing of iPhone out of that other 30% branch and up into the Samsung and Nokia sort of range. Once again, this graph is primarily just to show the trending and the growth. As you can see, here we're seeing production statistics across the world on a steady increase. We're going to touch on how a cell phone works in basics and cells and transmissions. Here we have basically a full duplex radio system, which is what a phone is. Theoretically and technically, it's not a phone. It's a two-way radio. We have one channel up and one channel back. So from this diagram, we can see in the car scenario, we have an open transmission to the cell phone tower and another open transmission from the tower back to the phone. And as you know, that gives us the ability to be able to talk while the other person is talking, as compared with a two-way radio set where you have to depress the talk button on the transmitter and then stop and listen to get your response. We're going to touch a little bit now on how a cell works. First of all, when the phone's turned on, there's a broadcast of the SID. That's very similar to the Windows-type security identifier platform where a unique identifier is broadcast. And what happens at that point in time is a registration process takes place. The signal is received and the phone is registered at the MTSO, which is the Mobile Telephone Switching Office, and that instance is recorded on a database. Now, this is a fairly important fact in relation to our forensics work, which will become evident as we move along. Now, a cell, by sheer way of its dynamics and the way it works in transmission and reception, is a honeycomb in shape. So when you want to make an area fully coveraged or give it full coverage, you will have these patterns of cells with the tower being in the centre of that hexagonal shape in each instance. What happens is, now if we give the scenario of our car that we had just now, with the car, say he's in the centre cell here and he's driving north on the page and heading to the top cell. As he reaches the border of the top cell, his signal will be picked up by the left and right top cells as well as the centre top cell, but the signal strength will be measured. And as the signal strength's measured and the transition from one cell to the other becomes imminent, basically the network will determine which cell is the best one to switch him to, in this case being the top one, the north one, and that cell tower will take over the transmission, okay? At that point in time, there's a log entered on the database which registers that new connection. So when we're doing investigations, we can refer to that database, which I'll touch on down the track. Now, the towers connected to the MSTO are in turn connected to the base station, which is in turn connected to the wired network. So that's how the connection flows through to the wired network. Just throw a question out now. Why do you think we have a centralized database? Just for the function, not forensics, but just for the functionality of the actual system. Anyone care to venture? Billing. Yeah, that's a good one, actually. Very true. Sorry. Dead right. Exactly right. The answer was in case it's receiving a call. So if you pick up a landline phone, dial that mobile phone number, the database looks it up and knows where to go to connect to that particular cell, to connect to that car or that mobile phone that's active on the network at that point in time. Okay, this is a fairly dated photo, but it gives you a bit of a schematic about the insides of the phone. We won't go into that in too much depth because there's probably 100 different ones that show you the same sort of thing. But basic fundamentals are relative to our forensics work, which we'll mention in a minute. And everybody's familiar with a SIM card. Each SIM card has a uniquely stored number on it, which is called the IMSI, the International Mobile Subscriber Identity Number. And this enables us and all the phone companies to be able to relate the account billing information, the travel of the phone and all that type of thing to one particular device. With the IMSI, the code is broken down into the first three digits is to do with the country. Pardon me. The next two digits are the mobile network code. And then the next 10 digits represent the mobile station identification code. So if we have a look at, say, Nepal, for example, in this example, we've got 429, first three digits, which stands for Nepal. We've got 01, being the fourth and fifth digit, which gives us the actual provider, which is Nepal Telecom, and then the remainder of the number is the MSIN. Okay, one of the difficulties in dealing with phone forensics as compared with computer forensics is that we all know and love the basic operating systems we see on computers such as Vista, XP, Leopard, Mac, and so on. When we look at mobile phones, the diversity of operating systems is enormous, and what's displayed here is only a small cross-section. We've got Symbian, Windows Mobile, Linux, FBUS, OBX, SyncML, IRMC. Basically, for every brand name, you can find a proprietary operating system that is completely different to any other operating system on a mobile phone. As a consequence, that makes it extremely difficult for the investigator to use a standard toolkit to go and examine a phone. Has anyone heard of Android? A few nods. Excellent. Android is the Linux-based operating platform, which is quite interesting. I'd urge you to have a bit of a look at that if you've got any interest in this. And it's getting quite a bit of traction. Now, nefarious activities in mobile phones, just branching a little bit away from forensics itself. This extract, the Security Encyclopedia for Militant Islamists, is freely available on the internet. In this particular extract, it shows that militants threatened to blow up cell towers that were being used in the evenings to track their whereabouts by triangulation. And when you think about it, at nighttime, many of us turn our phones off or the phones are inactive because we're asleep. However, there's an old saying that who do you find awake at 3 and 4 a.m.? It's usually the butcher, the baker, the policeman and the crook. So this is a very similar sort of scenario with the movement of terrorists within that particular theatre of operation using their cell phones at that time of day were being tracked and hunted down. Also, we all know about phones being used in explosive devices or IEDs, improvised explosive devices. This particular extract was taken from military.com and it was used to basically bring a heightened awareness to the troops in the field who might stumble across a device such as this. So here we have just a standard phone which has a small circuit board attached to the aerial. When the aerial starts to transmit or receive at any strength, it functions, the device, by way of actioning the detonator, which is in turn inserted into the explosive. And particularly of interest with this one is the fact that the call was made, but the device did not function. So that's a scary thought to those that were nearby at the time. We all know about other incidents around the world involving mobile phones as well. And as we go through these examples, I've selected about six that were very topical. They once again used the inbuilt alarm system or the call function of the phone to function the devices. The bombers who targeted commuter trains in Madrid on March 11, this is 2004, I believe, used the built-in alarm clock in mobile phones to set off the explosive. And the next one, in Jerusalem, it is believed a call to a cell phone in a rucksack set off a bomb in a Hebrew university in 2002, killing seven people. One of the Bali bombers was found that one outside had a functioned device triggered by a mobile phone, as did one which killed 12 people in the Jakarta Marriott Hotel in late August. Okay. Once again, just a bit of reinforcement about the mobile phone detonating bombs. How to combat that? We've seen Raytheon recently has developed a device which can be used to basically trick the phone into believing that the device is the network. As you can see here, the device includes a transmitter that mimics a cell phone base station and a metal horn to concentrate the signal. And that signal gives the phone the perception that it's connecting to a new network, and that gives the people who are operating that particular device the details of the phone. Now, during that connection, obviously anything external to the network can't ring in and make the device function, so therefore you've neutralised the bomb. What we do now is we'll go to another interactive question, and if you could bring that up for me. Okay, what is a growler? And this actually got past the census mob, so I can't answer that question in this forum. A robber's dog, a carrier-based electronic warfare plane, or an electronic device for testing electric motors? Oh, excellent. Okay, we've got three and four of the strongest responses, and a couple of interesting people with 13% on number one. Do you want to put your hands up? Only kidding. The correct answer is three and four. A carrier-based electronic warfare aeroplane, which is this particular beast. It's the E-18 Growler, and it's fitted as a mobile platform for a massive broadcast of signals across all bands and technologies in order to knock out all sorts of things, like wireless communications, mobile telephones and all that sort of thing. It's not that new, but not that well known either. And the other one that was mentioned, the device for testing electrical motors, is actually true as well. Okay, this is a CJAM, and this is a direct extract from their website, which tells us that this particular device provides a complete integrated engineering solution, including site evaluation, giving you the ability to deny or allow cellular communications within the precinct. Is that legal in Australia? Absolutely not. A resounding chorus of no. Even for intelligence communities and operatives at that level, these are not legal. However, there have been several questionable incidents of loss of transmission at airports that are unexplained at this stage. I know nothing about that. Okay. Let's go and look in the foreign language. FDMA, CDMA, TDMA, PDMA, GSM, UMTS, WCDMA, GPRS. Okay, we've got quite a vast vocabulary there, acronyms again, once again. Basically, this is a gradual development of the technology used for phone connections based on capacity. So the GPRS at the bottom is basically gives the ability for multiple devices in vast numbers to be able to connect to the network with large bandwidth traffic flow on that network, as compared with the FDMA of some years ago. Okay, some leading providers. We'll take a look at the forensics devices now. We've got access data with the mobile phone examiner, which is a fairly new piece of kit. It's a low-cost entry type of solution, which bolts directly into our forensics toolkit solution. So for those of you who might be familiar with FTK from Access Data, there's a number of tabs at the top of the page that you can click on to import data from, and we've added an extra one in relation to the mobile phone kit. We've got the Cellbrite kit, Logicube, X-ray, and I've been kindly lent this particular device, which, would anyone think that would get through the airport terminal readily? It does cause a few problems sometimes. There's some people in the audience I know have got first-hand experience with that. If you want to get a bit more update on this particular device and some access data information, Fulcrum Management out in the left corner there kindly lent that to me. So go and talk to the folks there and you can have a chat to them about that. And Paraben, which is another brand name. So we've mentioned the evidence gathering tools. Here we have basically what they can seize. With the cell deck, we're looking at mobiles, PDAs, BlackBerries and GPS. The X-ray, which is the one I just showed, is mobiles, PDAs and BlackBerries as well. Same for, I'm not sure what that middle one is. I can probably ask someone in the audience who might be able to tell me. Is it? Down the bottom? Is that right, Gary? Yep, okay. Yep. And Pandora's box and ZRT at the end there. Up here I've got a cell deck device. Now this is a bit hard to show to you all, but upstairs in the bronze section at 11, booth 11, which is, as you come up the stairs, it's right down the back left corner. They have this on demonstration, so I'd urge you to go and have a look at that one up there, and that's with Michael with ASI. So hop up there and have a look if you're interested. And evidence that can be gathered from a GPS device. GPS will give us the IMEI, images, photos, videos, audio recordings, the contacts list, the user files, and routes travelled. From the removable memory, we can gather such things as the images, photos, videos, audio recordings, games, files such as those stored normally on a computer, and routes travelled once again. This gives you a much deeper breakdown, very similar to what we've just mentioned. I'll jump from there. Now, just to give you some idea, this particular device is very much regarded as old school but still used. And what it does, apologise for the clarity of that, but it's a camera, like a webcam, mounted on a pedestal that takes a photo of the phone, which is on the platform there. And you manually function the phone using your fingers and then snapshot the result of that function, recording what you did by way of buttons you pushed and then the image. Very tedious. I have a friend who recently did an investigation that involved having to contact 260-odd people who were in the contacts list of the phone who had been exposed to a sexual transvestite prostitute who had AIDS, who kept their clients' numbers on the phone. How about that? And that was a purely manual process of one by one going through that and putting it into a database. Okay, here we have the Paraben Stronghold box. Basically, this is a Faraday cage in which you can place the phone, which prevents the signals from the network reaching the phone. What happens when the signals from the network reach the phone is there's an exchange takes place. And as you know, in courts, when we present evidence, we try and present best evidence. And that means that at the point of seizure, the evidence is preserved. So if we allow the phone to continue communicating with the network, that means that the evidence is being contaminated from what it was when we first seized it. So by placing it in a box such as this, we're separating it from the network. There are various other methods which we won't go into it at this point, but once again, at those two locations, you can ask further questions if you wish. Okay, what we're going to do now is a demonstration. And can we jump to question three, please, of the interactive questions? On average, how long does it take to copy the contents of a cell phone? 10 minutes, 30 minutes, 3 hours, and 4 hours? Okay, pretty well spot on. Depending on the size of the information stored and the capacity of the phone and what's on it, of course, that's going to vary. But generally speaking, around 10, 15 minutes, you can do a memory of a phone. Now, I have a BlackBerry phone here, which has not much on it at this stage. But what we'll do is we'll acquire the memory of this BlackBerry phone and have a look at what's on that just quickly. Here we've got the interface for the cell deck. I'm waiting for my stuntmen to call me. And what we do is we plug the cell deck, connect the PDA or whatever the device is to the cell deck, and then with the laptop through this interface, we do the acquisition. It's all right, we'll skip that bit. Did you? Thanks. Okay, the stunt man has failed. All right. So, read new device. PDA, BlackBerry, connect the handset. Okay. Now, here's the case field, obviously, where we can fill in all the details of the particular investigation. In this case, I'll just leave that blank for the purpose of the demonstration. We click on OK and connect. And we'll see the deck interacting with the phone as it draws off all the information in all the separate storage locations. And as you can see, that's ripping through that fairly quickly. I rang the phone just prior to the demonstration as a test. So now we'll just go into the call log and we'll go right to the end. And there's a thing I'd like to tell you here is the date and time is out by one day. So here we have a call on the 17th of May, which was done by 043-425-0424, which is my phone. So that shows you the acquisition and the current data that was recorded on the phone as a consequence of that call. Also, if we go through the other information here, we have the device information, contacts list, which is depending on how the phone is set up. If it's on a Microsoft Exchange server, you'll find that a lot of information can be stored server-side rather than phone-side. The call log, messages, and organizer. Okay. Basically, that concludes the demonstration for today, and I'd like to take any questions if anybody would like to ask any. Okay. The question was, will this device bring back the undeleted contents of the phone? And the answer in general is no. And as Gary here might be able to correct me on that if there's any variance to that at this stage.
It's only a logical acquisition of the phone, so it's only what you can see on the phone. You have to buy products that will actually pick stuff, like Exact or Pandora's Box or other products that are out there that actually pick stuff.
Okay. What Gary just said there was that there are other products available that will be able to give you the hex dump of the phone and in turn give you the deleted contents. But with the cell deck and the cell deck tech, the answer is no. Okay, any other questions? No? Yes, sorry. We need to password, find the password or crack the password to get onto the phone. Generally speaking, this type of investigation tool is used by police. It can be used in corporations across a network where there's known passwords and known encryption that can be easily deactivated in order to get to the contents of the phone. So it depends on the circumstances. But yes, if it's locked and you don't have the key, you do need to crack it or you won't get in. Was that, yes? Okay. The question was, when you're doing an investigation, would you just go with a standard extraction? Is that right? As opposed to a hex dump as well? To answer that, very much it would depend on the investigation and the severity of the investigation. Like in terrorist type investigations, you want to get as much as you can, you would hex dump it and do that sort of thing. Whereas if it's an investigation of not so great importance and a commercial type environment with time limits and money attached to it, maybe not. Okay. How are we going for time? One more?
Roughly how many devices or mobile phones and
types of things? Okay. The question is roughly how many mobile phones and device types will this type of device or the Celldex tech support? Is Troy in the room? No? Okay. I don't know the exact answer. At the back of the manual, and this changes every 2 weeks because there are quarterly updates on software connectors and that nature of thing, there's a listing of about 300 to 400 at this stage.